All right. I'd like to take a minute and introduce Ken Cutler. He's our afternoon keynote speaker. Ken is an internationally recognized consultant, lecturer, and hands-on trainer in the information security and IT audit fields. Ken is the principal consultant of KCA InfoSec Assurance. That's an independent consulting firm delivering a wide array of information security and IT audit management and technical professional services. Additionally, he is currently responsible for the cybersecurity and professional certification curriculum development and the senior lead instructor at Security University. Ken has been a longtime active participant and advisor in the U.S. federal, international government, and industry security standards initiatives, and co-authored NIST SP 800-41 guidelines on firewalls and firewall policy. Ken has also published works on the intricacies of information security, security architecture, disaster recovery planning, wireless security, vulnerability testing, firewalls, and single sign-on. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce Ken Cutler.
Gary, thanks for the great introduction. Before we get into data leakage, you know, one of the big concerns maybe doesn't bother you folks in the Big Ten. The biggest concern of leakage is college football conference leakage. Just ask the Big East. So when we get down to real basics or whatever, sometimes it's nice to protect your data, but protect your football teams from going to the wrong place. Anyway, what I want to talk about over the next hour or so, and some of it you may rate as common sense, but do you ever notice that common sense isn't very common? So bear that in mind. Also, I'm not your normal keynote, and I also, in addition to trying to motivate you and inspire you and help you to dance and not sleep at night and things like that, I also like to try to give you content. Gary has put all the proceedings on the web, and this is 133 slide. Again, I'm not going to present all 133. I can talk fast, but not that fast. The last 34 pages, I think you'll consider those to be enduring references. There's where to go to get both commercial and free tools. I know some of you are pressed for budgets, so the first thing I always look for is how to do stuff for free and take it from there. You know how Radio Shack says, don't just buy something, do something. I just say, let's do something without buying anything. Okay? Well, you know, data security, for all the years I've been associated with it, and that's, you know, I think when I first got into this stuff, Jimmy Carter was president. Kind of scary, right? Well, speaking of the government, close enough for government work, we now have viruses appearing in drones. So that gives the military something to think about. And of course, the earlier part of the year, Hillary Clinton was not a very happy camper. But of course, you know, when you're in the government or large organizations, you always blame the lowest ranking person for the incident. So a mere maybe 750,000 records that maybe Hillary didn't want leaking out about some of her relationships with foreign governments. And of course, it's not just the U.S. phenomenon. I go to Russia on a regular basis, and they have a Rust leaks. They always try to copy us, but somehow they always miss something. If you'll note the third paragraph here, it was not immediately clear who suspended its operations. Now, give me a break. You know what goes on in Russia? And nothing is sacred. Okay, every once in a while, McDonald's will revive the McRibs. Personally, I prefer to go to places like Tony Roma's or whatever that specialize in ribs versus McDonald's. And they also revive the Monopoly. Now, the thing is with the Monopoly, you can't buy the stuff on the dollar menu. You have to get the high-ticket items there. But apparently, McDonald's has some security problems, and it's not unique to them. Walgreens, same thing. But our annual award, sort of the equivalent of the worst security situation, probably goes to BP. And it's not isolated to information security. Notice the special version of their logo that gradually has oil leakage going into it. But hey, okay, so now we have people filing claims to say, hey, you know, you ruined my life in the Gulf Coast. Well, then they had this laptop, and somehow it got exposed with 13,000 people's important information on it. So I would probably give BP our Darwin Award for information leakage for this year. So what are we going to talk about for the next hour? Number one, if you're not already aware of some of these things, some of them you are, some of you aren't. I want to make sure that you don't miss things that are right under your nose. And we want to talk about real stuff. Management says, oh, well, that stuff will never happen to us. You really don't want to make the headlines of the Wall Street Journal with like a virus named after your name or your organization's name, for example. And I don't just raise issues. I try to give you practical solutions on how to deal with this. Now, like I said, I've got 99 slides. On a number of these slides, what you'll find, again, I strongly encourage you to download this at your earliest convenience when Gary makes them available on the internet and stuff. These are, if each one of these 13 bad areas of potential data exposure is staring in the face, what would you do about it in just that context versus, oh, I'm supposed to remember to have policies and awareness and things like that? So on a number of the slides, I'm just going to give you a couple quick points that are relevant to that particular area, because I think we've already figured out we've got to do policies and awareness. Well, now that you've figured it out, how come you're not doing it? No excuses. We'll talk about that at the reception. The Big Four, one of their valuable services, I find, if you're trying to grind an axe in a certain area of security, is to take these really cool surveys. And the 2011 PricewaterhouseCoopers one sort of plays right into what I'm talking about this afternoon. It's really a bigger issue than information or data leakage. It's doing information security to protect the thing that's most valuable to you. Besides your employees, it's your data. Number one item, increasing focus on data protection. Now, one of the guys that I want to be like when I grow up, maybe John O'Leary's thinking the same thing here, we want to be this Ponemon guy. Every time you turn around, the guy takes a survey, right? And he gets paid for it. You know, that's even more fun than information security. Probably better job security as well. Number one item, protecting sensitive data. Now, here's the five fun questions to throw at your board of directors and everybody that goes down the hill from them. Now, do you really know where your data is? Well, let's see. It's in these Oracle databases. No, wait a minute. Excuse me. What about all those file sharing applications you have? Oh, we forgot about those. You know where some of these come up? You're cutting corners on your disaster recovery plan. You forgot to back all that stuff up. Yeah, if you want to find out who knows where your applications are, usually it's not the head of applications development. It's the guy that has to manage the information recovery process, you know, business continuity planning, DRP, and all that good stuff. Just where is your data, and how are you using it? Now, here's another important point. How much is it worth to somebody else? You know, think about corporate espionage. Back when I was at American Express, we coined the term ECP. Anybody got an idea what an ECP is? For an all-expense-paid round trip to downtown Cleveland, the first person that gets it right, an enlightened cleaning person. Have you ever noticed that most cleaning contracts do not include backing up your systems? You know, the dead giveaway is they're sticking CDs and USBs and things like that in your computers while they're dusting off the monitor. Excuse me. They're probably taking that to some other country so they can make money and put more of our citizens out of work. Now, are any of you doing service-oriented architecture, SOA? How many of you are doing it and don't know about it? Okay? And what I bring up here, do you know all the paths to your data? I worked with a client a while back, actually in one of your cities in Ohio, and I won't mention its name because you might figure out who it is. And they're doing Java, and I don't mean coffee breaks in the morning or trying to compete with Starbucks. So they asked me to evaluate a brand new prototype Java application, complete with service-oriented architecture. So all I was trying to find out is, for data entitlement, where do the owners have to specify who can get to what? You know, that's what you're supposed to be doing, Sarbanes-Oxley and all those type of neat deals that people lie about but do it anyway. Well, anyway, I talked to one architect over the phone, and I'm drawing this Visio diagram. Well, again, sometimes you might miss something while you're talking over the phone. So I go on site, and I talk to three different architects, and I get a different drawing each time. The first one was a morning meeting, so they had Dunkin' Donuts napkin drawings. And then later in the day, we had Subway, and then we shifted over to maybe Fat Annie's cookies or whatever. No three diagrams matched the one I had. Does anybody know where your data is? They didn't even know where their application was. Who owns it? Because they're the ones that figure out how you're supposed to protect it. Didn't they call that data classification? Back when, you know, George Washington was president and I was learning information security from John O'Leary, that's what they always told me. John always told me that. And then who can really get to it and how well do you protect it? I know this sounds like a joke, but the joke's on your senior management. Then that's not a good situation. Now, why would anybody want your data? It's called fraud, embezzlement, theft, espionage, or they just don't like you. Now, here's a very valuable resource. When you go to the appendices, I said that's the last 34 slides in this handout. One of the valuable resources I use, if nothing else, to update my hall of shame on data leakage is the Identity Theft Resource Center. Look at the top five data breach risks. It's not somebody from China. It's not somebody from Korea. It's stolen equipment, insider theft. Oh, now it's time for some hackers, right? External intrusion. Now, I'm sure you don't have any of these, so this is all theoretical. Negligent employees. Some of them are eating up all your tax dollars, so no problem, we'll just raise the deficit. And then finally, subcontractors who act like employees. Oh, you forgot to terminate their accounts when they leave, when the contract expires? Now, I'm not Ken Cutler Esquire, and I'm going to give you a non-liability thing to say. Whatever you get here is for awareness. Don't go into court and say, Ken Cutler said this is the law. But many of you are affected by many different laws. If you're an insurance company, you write policies in a lot of different states. Now, I was working several years ago with a client. There was this tiny credit union. And I figured, oh, they probably operate in three states. So one of the things I was trying to do was find out what state laws they had to comply with. So I figured, okay, we're going to get three or four states maybe. Well, the marketing department, you know, the people that can spell security forward and backwards, your marketing department? Have you got any of those, right? Well, anyway, they come with the results, and somehow they missed one of the states. So 49 states, oh, hold on to your seats, and 13 foreign countries. So these are all places where you might be violating their privacy laws, for example, especially if you have a breach. Speaking of breaches, good news is the state of Ohio, they have a data breach law. And by the way, a very useful reference if you want to keep current on states that can affect your life, www.ncsl.org. They keep you current on state laws. Now, there's 14 states that are updating those to make them more exciting for you. Sort of like lifetime job security for security people. So I ask, well, if we have lifetime job security, why do we always get laid off? Now, here's one area where apparently Ohio hasn't got the message yet. One of the biggest issues I'll highlight later in the presentation, what happens when you throw stuff away? Data disposal laws? Ohio doesn't have one, according to this reference. And whatever, so it's okay while it's still good, but you throw it away, Ohio doesn't care. Now, if you do health care for many years, HIPAA was your middle name. Now, that didn't ensure any security. A couple years ago in Indiana, I'm doing a pen test, and I'm looking the assistant CIO in the eye, and you know what my final remark was? Sir, I'd be scared to death to be a patient in your hospital. So HIPAA apparently didn't have much influence on them. But now, this even sounds important. The High Tech Act, this says now we've got security breach opportunities. Now, the federal government, when they're not busy trying to up the debt limit and things like that, I think there's another attempt in Congress to try to have a national data breach law. You know what happens when our government steps in, right? So also, don't forget about the international arena. You're all probably familiar with the TJX hack a number of years ago. You know, they're in my hall of shame in terms of largest data leakage opportunities and such. Well, the Canadian government, after them, they could care less about the credit card data because have you ever returned something after Christmas? I know you always get gifts you always like forever. You never take them back. Well, you don't have the receipt, and you show them your driver's license, and then the driver's license gets stored for permanent use and abuse. Well, the Canadian government was jumping all over TJX about the Canadian citizens' data was there because people return stuff, because TJX does stuff on both sides of the border. Now, here's some important tips about all this compliance stuff. Back to my credit union organization, they made a fatal mistake. All due respect to FDIC and the bank regulators, they work for this thing called the U.S. government. They are not resident authorities on state laws. And chances are, you know how H&R Block will go, you know, for the tax audit and in court if necessary with you? Don't expect any state, federal examiner to go into court with you when some state's after you. So make sure you get the information from a reliable source. Also, another important point is that the physical location of that data It may be, if the data is in that particular country or state, the law applies, or may apply wherever it sits. So if you haven't brushed up on what state laws and country laws affect you, that's a good homework assignment. Good job for your compliance officer. Okay, a couple other thoughts here. Every once in a while, we get the hit too many buttons at once PowerPoint trick. PCI DSS. Now, many of you may not be affected by that. How many of your organization are affected by PCI DSS? Isn't that the neatest checklist you've ever run in your life? And if you honestly passed it, did you really honestly pass it? Section 6, the web application stuff, it's a great inspiration to outsource and let somebody else worry about it. But this is one of the toughest, if not the toughest, security checklist known to man, woman, or anybody else who likes to run checklists and whatever. And even if you're not affected by it, you might want to use it as a benchmark. Now, all this brings us to the ever-popular GRC, Governance, Risk, and Compliance. And this drives a lot of organizations. And you got to do the risk analysis and the gap analysis, which ties into what I'm going to talk about for the rest of the presentation. Now, let's go to Kenny's Hall of Shame. Now, I intentionally picked 13 because I know none of you are superstitious, right? As Heartland Payment Systems is still the all-time record holder. And they were very tacky as well. Remember, a major event in U.S. history was the inauguration of Barack Obama, right? So that's just like somebody started a fire on the other side of town and all the police and all the fire department went over there and then somebody robbed the bank that was left alone. Well, Heartland Systems suddenly announced, oh, we have about 130 million credit card records, give or take a few. They announced that on the day that Mr. Obama got inaugurated President of the United States. Nice guys, right? Now, Sony, the one and only, actually showed up twice. Now, one of the things I want to point out here, you think, oh, that's just hacking stuff. We got all that covered, plus we have people practicing it down the hall. Look at item number 4. Once again, our tax dollars in action. I'm sure you'd never do this, is send in some PCs for repair and not bother to adjust the hard drive contents. 76 million records. This is really wild. It's like somebody running there with a calculator and whatever. How about UK? So it's not just a U.S. problem, right? Ah, lost detailed records. Okay, gets better. Now we move over to Southeast Asia. We have the GS Caltex oil refinery. And we're out in the town dump. Well, there's a CD with 11 million records on it, right? So in case you missed it, you can buy all this neat software and other stuff. Do evaluate your disposal and salvage and stuff you're sending in for repair that might have valuable information on it. Oh, speaking of funny stuff, one of our Hall of Shame members is this rockyou.com. I don't know if any of you ever participated. Again, you don't have to raise your hand. I wouldn't admit that. Imperva. Again, Imperva's here this week. Again, I want to thank him for doing some great forensics work. You know, often, you know, when you do password cracking, you already usually know the results before you do it. You just do it to impress management. You know, you run Loftcrack or something like that and act like you know what you're doing. Well, anyway, the number one password was 123456. Distant second was a mere 12345. And then you can use your imagination for the rest of it. Now, let's look at some other things to say, are you a sitting duck because you match this scenario exactly? 98% of the breaches came from servers. And I know that comes as a major shock. Usually cell phones can't carry that much data. You could have avoided them by simple or intermediate controls. That's no fun just using stuff that comes with the technology. Well, that's why would we want to do that? That's boring. The attacks weren't considered difficult. A caveman can do it. No offense, Geico. The evidence was in their logs. Now, the PCI DSS stuff, even though you think you're compliant, sometimes you're not, so defending those people, maybe that's not a good stat. And, of course, your solid, always on the ball, internal information security and audit people, well, only 39% found those. We had somebody third party find them. And guess the number one abuse opportunity? Giving somebody too much privilege. Now, I didn't say handcuff everybody, but didn't President Reagan say something like trust but verify? Very important concept there. Oh, common sense again. Watch that stuff, Cutler. Deloitte and Touche Tohmatsu, they tend to survey the financial institutions. There's this wild idea that they've mastered security. Maybe some of you work for them, and that doesn't sound like where you go to work every day. Look at the number one audit finding. They give you too much privilege, right? Well, every user needs root so the system runs more efficiently? No, I don't think so. So let's briefly talk about DLP safeguards in terms of a technology you can go out and buy, or there's even free stuff you can try. What we're trying to do here is keep your management, notice your management, out of trouble. You know, the number one hammer you should always use in security, could you demonstrate due care in a court of law? The heck with Sarbanes-Oxley and HIPAA and all those type of things, because some of those are a little bit nebulous to say, are we there yet? You know, Bart Simpson keeps asking this question. But could you demonstrate in a court of law that you're doing everything that's reasonable? Those of you that have taken the CISSP, the prudent man rule, for example, loss of profit, that usually catches management attention, right? Dollars and cents or whatever your favorite currency is. Tarnished published image, unless you're, you know, work for the government, they don't care, okay? Safety or, of course, security. But it's making sure your data doesn't fall in the wrong hands. So what we're doing here, how do we do electronic Where's Waldo? So you want to go out and identify this stuff. And there's three different technologies. Sometimes the packages you acquire do two or more of these. Number one, watching stuff fly around in your network. Of course, if it's encrypted, it all looks the same. So make sure you have an encryption key to decrypt it. Stuff at each endpoint. Stuff at each endpoint, and then finally, data at rest. Now, I didn't say this is simple. How many of you have implemented something along these lines? Right? So do you have like designated people, like you, like Roger gets the letter A, and you get the letter X for certain words, and figure out whether we want to release the email? Okay? Now, these can be expensive. They don't taste great. Maybe they're not less filling or whatever. So there are some downsides. So they're not instant security. Oh, got some more bad news for you? Quite a number of my 13 issues that we're going to blow through here for the remainder of the presentation, they may not help you in overcoming them. So here's Kenny's fabulous lucky 13. And I've broken these down into two categories. The column on the left relates to your enterprise is totally at fault. Now, we already know what end users do or don't do. So there's some things that they're usually very influential in doing. So things like data stores for the enterprise. Oh, data warehouses. Let's just throw the data out in the street in some places. Hey, what a deal. Of course, the ever popular test data that never gets scrubbed. Oh, backup media. Oh, we were supposed to encrypt that? Nobody told me that, or it didn't work with Oracle. And of course, when you throw stuff away, right? You didn't do it very well. Of course, the end users like to make copies of everything, right? It's no fun doing Oracle. Let's have flat files all over the place. Stuff that walks, stuff that talks, stuff that makes, again, lifetime job security, right? So, CSO Magazine, by the way, if you're not leveraging that resource, that is one of the very best in keeping current with what CSOs deal with every day. And they do things like evaluate awareness videos. They tell you metrics that are garbage versus metrics that are really, really good. It's really a super resource. Well, guess what? Number one exploit targets are databases. Why? Because there's a lot of data there. So where do we start with? In case you haven't heard this afternoon, excessive permissions followed by excessive permissions. The owner, oh, he does his annual Thou shalt support the SOX effort, right? Let me get that out of my inbox to go back to regular work. In their defense, often applications sound like your place. They create all these groups with privileges and never bother to ask the owner, but he's supposed to sign off on the stuff. What would you do? What would you do if you're stuck with that? Oh, let's go directly to the database. Hot tip without getting technical. Take a look at the permissions lists, you know, the tables that are in your databases like Oracle and whatever, and see if there's a strange bunch of permissions are called grants and not, you know, the tomb where that president was buried in and stuff. Is it you've got individual users or something that looks peculiar that can read the whole database? Aren't you supposed to write views and transactions and not give somebody the whole pie every time you turn around? But there's a lot of stuff, you just give the farm away. Now, SQL injection sounds like a drug problem, so you may have to bring in the feds to help you on that. No, seriously, it's more bad programming. There seems to be a lot of that going around. DBAs have one of the toughest jobs in IT, and management never bothered to train them on security. Sound like your place? I'm not putting DBAs down, I'm putting their management down. You got a problem there. And of course, you mentioned doing more logging to a DBA, and they'll probably kill you, and you got off easy because of the overhead, and we're going to talk about how to deal with that in a few minutes. Top five hazards dealing with PCI data, right? Now, I'm sure none of you have this problem, right? Vendor-supplied default passwords. You know, we're talking about the older Diebold ATM machines at XP with a blank password in them, right? And the good old SA account. And then Microsoft gives you a README file how to overcome the block that says if you try to use the SA account with a blank password, how to bypass that check. That's nice. Not protecting the card data in itself. But, look at bullet number three. Over-assignment. Need to know. No more, no less, right? Least privilege, all the stuff we learned in the land of CISSP. Oh, you want some instant audit findings? As you move to distributed computing, you see my little caution sign with the exclamation point? And I won't mention the bank, but they're real, real big. They're one of the top five in the U.S. And I did an on-site presentation on web security, and I asked them how many findings they came across on what's called the database connector. That's like a free ride into your data. And all the heads went down the table. It wasn't because I was wearing them out. They never bothered to think about that in their audits. Now, I'm sure none of you are guilty of that. That's a direct ride into the back end that everybody figured, anybody in front of me I trust? Don't think so. Don't think so. And here's something to think about. You know, one of the forms of punishment I found over the years in security is having somebody tell you, you got to figure out how to use logs. Have you ever run into that? You know, if somebody steps out of line, don't fire them. Say, now you're in charge of log management. Or you make them head of security for a university and see how long it is before they go insane. But anyway, one of the big problems in the industry, all due respect to you vendors out there, is the fact that we spend too much time on infrastructure security, and at the end of the day, how about our data? Remember all these sources of potential attacks? Some of them are people inside your halls, right? So, very interesting comment. By the way, if you're not already leveraging these, information week analytics and dark reading should be on your must-read every week list. They have white papers that are worth paying for. They give them out for free. They give you a window where you can get them for free. And I thought this was an outstanding quote. When you're paying attention to who's doing port scans on your perimeter, you should be paying attention to who's making mysterious queries against your databases. Have you ever tried to steal a network? And what do you get after you've done it, right? A bunch of wires or a bunch of, pings and stuff flying around? The data is what I'm after. Pay more attention to your data. Hello. It's data time. So what do we do there? Obviously, you got to have good standards. And make sure you get your DBA educated if he's not good. Again, no offense to the DBAs. You just need to invest more in making them even stronger and such. But also, service-oriented architectures. What are all the paths to your databases that you didn't know were there? And often there's no roadblock, free ride to your data. We don't want that. Now, this is not your reaction when you have a security breach, when you say, damn. This is one of the most interesting technologies that can overcome the long-time issue. We don't want to blow up our database by logging everything. Take a look at database activity monitoring. In the back of the handout, there's a list of a number of vendors that are in this market space. One of the leaders is Guardium. You know, IBM thought they were important. They acquired them. For example, again, there's many other prominent vendors in that market space. What it is, it's a front-end system, almost like a glorified packet sniffer, that picks up the stuff going into the database. Now, you still have to figure a way to keep an eye on your DBAs, but it's a great way to overcome the compliance problems of, oh, we got to turn on all the log records on the database and then watch smoke come out of the processor. You don't want to do that. Identity and access management, real big deal. We're going to talk more about website security in a few minutes. Now, here is a poor cousin of databases. You know, we just got done saying, don't give everybody all this privilege on the production databases so they can go and abuse it, including bringing it down in the middle of the day, which usually doesn't go over too big with your management. If you talk to the Department of Defense, you want them to start shaking in their boots, use the phrase aggregation and inference. It's putting too much data in one place that when it was scattered out in production, you couldn't pull all the pieces together. And then you dump it all in one place. Oh, it's not production, so we don't have to protect it. No. Now, again, I'm not worried about somebody doing direct fraud. I'm worried about them stealing your data again, right? So you need to scrub this data. Why do you need credit card numbers when you're analyzing financial data? Now, there may be some ins and outs when you're doing deep, dark healthcare analysis and things like that, but patient IDs and things that get you into HIPAA trouble or whatever. So, again, get people off your production databases. Get them a data warehouse for Christmas. There's, oh, Roger, how many shopping days till Christmas and stuff? But do make sure you protect your data warehouse. Okay, see if anybody's awake. Audience challenge. Got five prominent companies on slide 42. What do they all have in common? Now, don't tell me they're in the IT industry, okay? No all-expense-paid round trip to downtown Cleveland. No, they've all appeared on a place that I hope your company hasn't showed up. The Hall of Shame for Cross-Site Scripting Exposure. XSSCD. XSS stands for Cross-Site Scripting, the most prevalent vulnerability in web land. And there's a lot of good company there. There's Hillary Clinton. There's Barack Obama. There's PayPal. There's just about everybody. Are you there? So if you haven't been to this site, you might want to swing by xssed.com and see if you show up. There's some very prominent banks there, and this is not good publicity. So notice who's here. Let's see. We got somebody's bank, IBI Bank, Amazon.com. I buy a lot of stuff from them. Fujitsu, Dow Jones. No wonder the stock market's crazy, right? Oh, no problem. Bank of America. That gives you a lot of trust in the banking system of the United States of America. Oh, AA. Well, hope landings equal takeoffs and so on and so forth. Tiger Direct. So these could be opportunities for privacy breaches in the land of Web 2.0. Now, here's our guy Poneman again. That's the guy that John O'Leary and I want to be like when we grow up. He surveyed C-level executives, right? You didn't think they knew anything? They can surprise you sometimes. Look at the number one item for CEOs. Application flaws, right? Now, I know you don't worry. This is all academic. You all have perfect programmers that test their code, never hang around the water cooler after the finals in American Idol to say, I thought the other person should have won, or why was that such a crummy game on Monday Night Football? Number one issue, application security flaws. Most firewalls don't do anything with applications. So, poor design. Now, I'm sure you don't have any backups stored on your web server, but if you use any of the prominent scanning tools like WebInspect or equivalent and whatever, that's one of the things they look for. So if you want to qualify for a Darwin Security Award, that's a good way to get one. And several years ago in USA Today, they highlighted some companies that did just that. Or, oh, here's some financial results that weren't supposed to be released till next week. Oh, well, in case we forget, let's put it up on the web server anyway and then pull it up when it's time. Well, apparently somebody found out about them by just probing around their website. Try this. Go to a web page, and you know where you got your URL. Take your backspace and delete some of it. Hit enter and see if you can go to that part of the website. If you can, you probably have a problem. Or they have this thing called robots.txt, which is one of the most ridiculous security measures ever. Here's where we don't want you to look. Where do you think the first place is you're going to look? Robots.txt. Remember that one. So we've got SQL injection fraught with opportunities. Now, one of the things that SANS has done in partnership with some other organizations is they have the top 25, but I figured I could cause enough trouble with 10. So look at the top three of the top four. You know, Buffer Overflow says you're probably Microsoft or somebody that writes system software or programmers that like to write in C, which is not too many people anymore. But SQL injection, if you're trying to pass PCI DSS, that's one of the things they're most interested in. Am I going to steal credit card data by SQL injection? If that doesn't work, let's try cross-site scripting. So usually you can move through a very tough PCI DSS audit if you can demonstrate, and that's not simple to do in many cases, that you can handle SQL injection and also cross-site scripting. But while you're at it, make sure they can't do OS command injection. Does anybody remember the original Netscape communicator browser? And does anybody remember the publishing company called QUE? They used to publish books that are about 2 inches thick, how to use Microsoft Word and stuff like that. Now, normally you wouldn't figure that would be a hacker guide, right? That's, you know, for some idiot on the street who's trying to figure out how to use a browser and he needs 800 pages to do it. So I never overlook opportunities for strange stuff. So I'm thumbing through the book, and on page 578, people accuse me of being a steel trap of useless information. Page 578, they're showing you how to do command injection where you can flatten a whole Unix file system and stuff, right in the middle of a how to use Netscape book. And it wasn't authored by Hacking Exposed or some of those guys, I mean, whatever. So that's kind of scary. Now, let's move to West Africa. See, this is our tour around the world to find data laying around. Now, I'm sure you're all familiar with Johnny Long. He made the term Google hacking and the techniques very cool. I mean, that's really embarrassing. Go into the boardroom and show your management what you can do on Google in terms of hacking your website. Well, anyway, Johnny got this letter from somebody in West Africa, this guy named Samuel. And he's asking Johnny, I'd like to teach me about using Googles. That sounds like President Bush, right? Googles and all that kind of stuff when he was president. Hack credit card numbers with full informations. I will be glad if my request is replied or direct me to a link to make my dream come true. Okay, well, you sure get some interesting emails sometimes. Then there's Mr. Gonzalez, who, like, he hit all the places I like to shop, right? Or you go to a quick stop, Heartland Systems, and then you see Heartland Systems, TJX, got some good stuff at TJ Maxx. Now, a lot of stuff came out about they're using WEP encryption, you know, on their wireless, which is next to worthless. You know, use air crack and snap it, you know, maybe 30 seconds if you're lucky. But the indictment said, now, of course, sometimes indictments aren't totally accurate, SQL injection, all these were SQL injection hacks, kind of scary. Then we go to Staples, we get the easy button. And from Citrix, who has, I think, one of the better SSL VPN solutions in the market, here's what's scary. It's pretty easy, and the payoff is big. So what are you doing about it, right? So when you do SQL injection, you're putting stuff in usually entry boxes on a web page. Now, let me ask you this. Think about when you go and do your banking, right? You put in an amount, or you have to fill in a name and address. How many people do you know that are named C-sharp with tick marks? Now, maybe you're expanding your business to do Mars and Venus and other planets where they name themselves differently than we do. Maybe it's like those upgrade lists, you know, for Delta and whatever, where they have multiple people and they abbreviate your name and it looks kind of funny with numbers after it. Maybe those are Delta standby customers. I don't know. But why would your application accept data that looks absolutely nothing like the data? So what's the risk? Sensitive data, modify stuff, tastes great, less filling. And guess what the root cause is? Back when I learned to program, Lyndon Johnson was president of the United States, okay? You didn't know they had computers back then. You thought it was stone and chisel and Flintstones and all that. We did this novel thing called data editing, right? If it doesn't look right, if it's an amount field, I'm seeing letters, you kick out the punch card. Remember, that was the precursor to TCP/IP. We had 80-column cards with information in them, right? Security was no fun. Your biggest concern was you're an insurance company with a claims file of 25 drawers of cards. You have a card jam while you're doing a sort, right? See, you couldn't present all this stuff back then because life was dull. All you did is sort cards, right? Look for the holes. Input validation. In case you missed it, input validation. And still, if you missed it, if you're sleeping in the afternoon, input validation. The other problem is dynamically modifying SQL. Those two things open up the avenue for SQL injection. Along with, there's the XP command shell command in Microsoft and also Sybase. Take over the whole database and then figure out what to do with it. That's kind of scary. And of course, don't buy the patching stuff because it may break. Or let's just put everybody in supervisory state. Then we move to cross-site scripting. This is where you put up pop-up boxes. Again, go to that XSSED site and try some of those and whatever. Like I say, you may get to practice on your own company's site if you get an opportunity. So what's the issue there? Now, cross-site scripting, the hit isn't quite as immediate. SQL injection, once you start pulling, you can pull anything you want. But cross-site scripting is sort of like some of the investment advertisements, one investor at a time, one victim at a time, but better than nothing if you know, get a lot of time on your hands. You're somebody unemployed in Eastern Europe and you're looking for entertainment or to support your drug habits. So what's your safeguards? You got to document best programming practices. And a couple places to start. Whether you have to worry about PCI DSS or not, go to the PCI standard site and download the checklist and just look at Section 6 and see if you can muster up to that. The other thing is, I would give PCI a lot of credit, PCI DSS, for legitimizing OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project. Do they have a chapter in Cleveland or in Ohio? If you haven't leveraged them, make sure your programmers go and get some good training. They really do a good job on it. Also, if people claim to test stuff, do they do forced air condition testings? Oh, here's a name and address field. Let's put in funny characters and see what happens. Now, if coins start coming out of the computer, you know you have a problem, right? Also, do not allow remote authoring and development. Front page, we used to be guilty of that. WebDAV is another one. And you can run some simple scanners. One of the ones that's listed in the back is called NICTO, N-I-K-T-O. And it'll tell you, it'll give you the key command services that are there. Somebody can go in and modify your website, which also you probably get some Sarbanes-Oxley violations. It's called bypassing change control. But of course, I know you have all that locked down too, and we're just here for entertainment these 2 days. Use application firewalls. They're a very handy thing to stop all this until you can fix the code, which may take 20 or 30 years. Also, keep current. These are three useful sites. You've got the nvd.nist.gov from NIST, Secunia, which is an outstanding site in Northern Europe, and, of course, Security Focus, which is run by Symantec. Also, wouldn't it be nice to get a guarantee on software? Well, it's probably not going to happen next week, but SANS is working with attorney general's offices of states like New York State, maybe some others I'm not familiar with at the moment and such. And if you've got legal counsel with backbone, I know that's really tough requirements, including senior management with the same, is that over time, hopefully we can hold software writers to standards that say we can take them to court and we can really nail them, so maybe they're not counting their money as much as they are now versus doing software testing like they're supposed to. Now, let's throw out the baby with the bathwater. Let's just do outsourcing and, you know, be rid of something that's not our core competency. And Al Huger, Al used to be the moderator on Security Focus, and he has some interesting insights. You know, you take some of these industry giants like Google, and they've got incredible firepower. You know, they've got some great brain trust. Of course, they're out in Silicon Valley. Isn't that where they invent computing and things like that, and all the geniuses live out there and stuff, and sometimes they have fruit that they name their company after and so on and so forth? If they can get nailed, what about us mere mortals? You know, all us, you know, not-so-smart people here in the East and whatever? Got something to worry about. Outsourcing. The number one issue is you didn't know how to manage it when you had it, and then you don't know how to write contracts, and you don't know how to manage the contracts. It's not a technical issue. It's called management, and that's a problem with a lot of things I'm talking about, right? Of course, the big thing with cloud computing, your data is where? That's which planet? Uranus? Pluto? Oh, but it's cloud computing. Oh, they don't have any clouds there, so I guess we don't have to worry about that, right? Or maybe they have different types of gaseous clouds. International laws. The data is sitting in some other country, and they're looking out for themselves, and you're not looking out for yourself in the USA, for example. SAS-70s are borderline worthless many times, and their replacement may not be much better. We'll have to wait and see on that. Is that they're like, you know, here's all the, have you ever seen those vendor ads where they do the check marks, and they always have all the check marks in their column? I mean, not that they'd ever bend the truth or anything like that. Microsoft, always an industry leader in technology, was also an industry leader, and they are apparently the one that had the very first major cloud data breach, and that was back in December 22nd of last year, not too long ago. Oh, business productivity, business contact information. Those of you who are auditors out there, if you haven't done an occasional audit of strategic information, it would be valuable to a competitor. You better start doing those. It's nice to look at general ledger and all the money stuff, and again, don't stop doing that. But then, if they put you out of business, you don't have to worry about tracking transactions anymore. So business contacts can sometimes cost you business. So make a note when you download the handout, slide 65, and this was, you know, a very excellent survey by Deloitte and Touche. What were the safeguards they found in place for people who are doing outsourcing in cloud computing scenarios, starting with a confidentiality agreement? How do you address security issues? Let the vendor you know, the service provider figure that out for you? They always look out for themselves. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. They have very good lawyers. Is you better start looking out for yourself if you're not already doing that, because you're the one that's liable. But the most important strategy with outsourcing, cloud computing, otherwise, do be careful what you outsource. Do a risk analysis. Say there's definitely a business case for it, but over the years, people have told me that, you know, when the accountants take over, you're usually in trouble. Because you ever notice accountants don't generate revenue? How many times has the new CEO come from the financial or audit ranks versus somebody who is marketing or sales? They generate revenue and whatever. You got to manage the bottom line, but you also don't want to put yourself out of business doing it by giving the farm away, and that's called your data. Follow the database stuff that I talked about earlier, least privilege and stuff. Also, if you send out mailing list data, do have a system for decoy accounts. American Express, I was, you know, head of security for that company for a number of years. Bob Ferrani is the founder of the Savvy system, which is security authorization vendor information. They had rooms full of junk that were received by having decoy lists where people receive mailings and say, that's an authorized mailing versus, wait a minute, we don't recognize that stuff. And you catch somebody making a copy of your mailing list, which is the holy grail of a company like American Express. Now, test data. Well, you got to have decent data to test your applications, right? What about the sensitive data that's in there? Oh, it's not production, right? Well, that's not good. So what are we going to do there? Make sure you remove things that get you into legal or competitive trouble. You don't want to go to court. You really don't. Now, let's get a little low tech. Remember a little over a year ago, the president had some interesting visitors, right? So some they call them party crashers, right? Well, how'd you guys get into the White House? Now, to give you some insights on what your tax dollars are giving you in Washington, look at my last statement. Two members of the United States House of Representatives, Peter King and Benny Thompson, also sought legal action. Against who? You have lousy security, so you're going to sue the people that showed you you're idiots? Backup media is we do all this wonderful stuff to protect it online, and when you make backups, you don't bother to encrypt it or take care of it. And don't forget about your storage area networks either. Could I penetrate your valuable data stores by going after backups? Make sure you know where everything is. Is there a lid on it? I know that's a big job, but remind your boss about that. These are places where you can lose your data. Key strategy, encryption, encryption, encryption. Now, let's talk about being sloppy with what you throw away. And this happened in my home state of South Carolina, is green roll cart trash dumpster. And guess what was on some of the papers that were disposed? Social Security numbers, names, results of colonoscopies, but nothing important to worry about, right? And best of all, it had the Department of Health letterhead on the data, so there's no mystery about who threw it away. This happened in a Chicago suburb a little over a year ago. How would you like to see your Social Security number blowing down the street? You know, the answer, my friends, is blowing in the wind. Yeah, the answer is where you can get free data that's you know, can help on identity theft. It's just blowing down the street. This was actually in a town called Des Plaines, and it made, you know, the front pages of the Chicago Tribune and stuff. You'd think your stuff would be more secure. Now, how do you handle your disposal of storage media? Okay, some things to think about. They had a special on the Today Show. Do you have a designated drive basher that gets a sledgehammer at 4:30 every afternoon and beats the daylights out of your old hard drives? But what do you do to make sure that somebody doesn't make you a candidate to show up on Kenny's Lucky 13? Networks. Now, this is high tech. I just want to point out a couple things. You know, over the years, many of us grew up with the mainframes, all the way back to the punch cards. So you figure if anything was secure, because we had, you know, ISACA, we had MIS Training Institute, we had CSI and whatever showing us how to protect all that stuff. And then some wise guy, a bunch of wise guys come up with, you know, PCs, mobile computing and things like that. But we always thought, you know, if you can count on anything, the mainframe is secure. Minor detail, mainframes and encryption didn't work very well together. So I want you to take a look. If you're still using Life After MVS, ZOS, or iSeries AS400s, is your communication between those two in clear text? There might be an opportunity for somebody. Of course, your users are too dumb, And you say, oh, we use group policy objects to lock down workstations. Have you ever just tried taking a USB drive and booting your computer with some different operating system to go sniffing and things like that? Oh, and then you do war driving and only look at half the picture. You say, oh, we're looking for unauthorized access points on the premises. So you're running around, you know, GPS, defining rod. And you didn't bother to look at the client, end users, talking across the street because you won't let them go to their favorite X-rated site. So here I am with a client in Texas. And a big place if you're a sports fan these days, right? They won a basketball championship. They might win a World Series and whatever. But anyway, we're walking around the building, and we get a strong feed, and we keep going into the building, and then we go to the DBA area, right? Well, these DBAs I'm going to pick on, the little green light is flashing on the side of the PC, and it's called D-Link, and it's wireless, right? The guy's talking to Ruth Christ across the street, and I don't think he was ordering steaks. So what I'm telling you, when you do war driving, make sure you look at the client side of the equation as well as the server access point on your premises. You may be missing a big thrill that you don't want to have. Oh, and if you're running short of projects, how about your print devices? Have you ever wondered why people print stuff? I mean, have you ever tried to wade through Oracle and make any sense out of it if you're not a DBA kind of person? So you print stuff and then walk off with it, right? That stuff is probably going into your printer, clear text. The defaults with your HP Jet Direct are all blank and whatever. Whatever data you want, take it, right? And it's in a human consumable form, not the weird stuff that sits in databases and whatever. Now, flat files, that's when you make a copy of all the stuff in the databases and nobody knows where it is, right? Oh, and here's some more heads up. Couple key areas. Windows file shares have always been a kiss of death. One of my clients had the fun love just run all over their whole network, and it cost them about $300,000 or $400,000 to clean it up. Mere pocket change when you're on a small profit margin. And then the bane of Unix systems, NFS, network file systems and such. Well, with the advent of Windows 2008 Server and Windows 7, Microsoft says there might be a need for NFS. So you just thought that NFS, you know, port 2049, want to get a little technical for a moment, only runs on Unix? Wrong. You may see it running on Microsoft stuff. So just wanted to remind you, there's endless ways to give your data away and look for some of these footprints that could really stir things up. Discover, discover, discover. And this is where you got to use automated tools to find them. Okay, time for more IT industry trivia. What do these two guys have in common? What do these two guys have in common? They like to plant spyware in products, okay? They like to plant spyware in products. You know, Sony got beat up about that. Samsung put some little monitors to send information back to the mothership on some of their laptop and notebook computers. End-user computing is fraught with opportunities. Plus, the stuff moves around, can be stolen. How about somebody doing synchronization against your database systems? And then, you know who the slowest vendor to market is according to Symantec's threat analysis? Who's the slowest to market in putting out patches? Any idea? Apple, yeah. Well, they sure know how to make money, though. There must be something to that, right? Social engineering. Now, make sure you understand the different categories. Just going after the riffraff, you know, all of us and whatever, that's just plain phishing. But when they go after just people in your company, it's spear phishing. When they go after your senior management, then it's whaling. So remember those sequences? And you don't have to do it by calling them up anymore. Now, here's something that's a real thrill, and you notice I'm not pointing you to hacker sites or adult bookstores here. Office Max and Fry's. Now, in the East, you may not be familiar with Fry's. They're very big out in the West. They're sort of like a big warehouse of, you know, electronic toys. So here's a couple of children, or I'll say young teenagers and whatever, looking for a date on the internet. And there's mommy watching them. So if you want to spy on your offspring or whatever, on sale for only $97, you can get Web Watcher, right? Of course, you can spy on other people too while you're at it. Limited time only, 40% off. The whole thing with end-user computing, users are part of the problem, but they are definitely part of the solution. And that's why, again, like I say, I'm giving you checklists in each of these areas. So if you just want to address end-user application, you can take that part of the presentation, use that as a guide if you find it handy. But awareness, awareness, awareness. It's the best dollar you can ever spend on security, and I can never say enough about, you know, conferences to make all us aware, but what gets filtered back to the rank-and-file employees? Now, aren't iPads cool? Right, they're really cool things. You can do all kinds of things with them. This happens to be a Wi-Fi scanner. But here's something. You know how one of the important design criteria is when you enter passwords, you see the asterisk go into the little box? Well, here's a way to beat that system. And the name of the tool sounds like something you'd use in football. It's called a shoulder pad. So you hold up the iPad, try not to look suspicious, but there's a little blue light flash on keyboards that show up that the shoulder pad will analyze that and tell you what keys the guy pushed. So it's sort of like a iPad shoulder surfing. Hey, what a deal. Now, let's attack your batteries. This is getting scary, right? Now, you know, they're watching me violate my asterisks. Now they're after my batteries. Now, there's been Bluetooth attacks over the years. There's one that didn't like the Timofonica cell provider in Europe. So if you downloaded that virus, it would drain your battery. This is worse, is, you know, these batteries, how your laptop tells you, you know, how much is left or how worn the battery is, guess what's in there? A microprocessor, right? What do microprocessors normally need? Memory. Memory, okay? Memory means you can store stuff there, right? Your antivirus, ask your favorite antivirus vendor, do you check nooks and crannies in the hardware? Besides what's on your hard drive and whatever, great place to have some type of fun software peek out. And some of the stuff was demonstrated at Black Hat during the past year, for example. Now, one of the big issues that I've encountered for many years is how do you deal with employees bringing their own procured technology into the network? Now, the accounts will say, well, that's a great way to save, you know, money for the company. There we go again with the, there's more than bottom line issues here. And the way I see this, what are the risks to the enterprise if your employees are using, like, you know, their own tablets or notebook computers or smartphones, you know, with company data? Well, more opportunities for it to get exposed if they lose it. Data breach notifications. Oh, yeah, well, one of my employees had this data on their iPad that we didn't buy them, so now we got to report this, you know, depending on what states and countries affect your life. And then the employee is that, now we have to search your device. No, I don't want to see all those pictures, right? Or anything else that gets exposed. So there's two sides to that coin, and many companies wrestle with this, and most of the time they come to the conclusion, we're going to be real restrictive about personal technology connected to our systems. The trouble is you got things like tethering and whatever that keep pushing that out there, and you can't, like, stop them. What about USB drives? They're one of the greatest things since sliced bread. Once again, we visit South Carolina. Flash drive containing personal information. Oh, somebody returned it. Well, it's nice of them to clean off the drive. Now, this sounds like a public official. There's no reason to believe that anybody's information was compromised. Yeah, thank you again, right? Is that baloney? Now, in terms of mobile devices, right, also be aware of shoulder surfing. The fact that when people are out in public areas and they're trying to get work done, I'm guilty of this myself sometimes, who's looking over your shoulder? Especially if they start commenting about your consulting report. That's not very good. They're carrying a lot of PII data around. Again, doctors are very guilty of this, but again, you know, they take people apart and put them back together again and have a relationship with the Almighty, so you got to be careful with how you push politics on. They may walk to another hospital, okay? Things you salvage and don't bother to clean up. Awareness, 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 including be careful in public places. Be careful in public places. Risk analysis I just went through about privately procured technology in the corporate network. Centralized device administration, probably more use of crypto. Okay? Email. Email is always treacherous. Could this be one of your sysadmins on slide 97? The LulzSec folks have exposed people who have visited pornographic sites. And some of the visitors came from .mil and .gov addresses. Some of them were apparently sysadmins. I guess it gets boring working in government sometimes, so you got to go out and look at interesting pictures. And apparently this guy saw his name in an exposure list, so he's not a happy camper at the moment. So do advise folks to exercise extreme caution, because often if you are the keys to the kingdom people, you can often abuse that. Social networking, where people tell things about themselves. It's amazing the things that people reveal in Facebook and whatever. I mean, sometimes you wouldn't tell your best friend, but you put it on Facebook. Awareness, awareness, awareness. So how do we tie all this together? I've thrown a lot of stuff at you, and maybe some of it's kind of scary, and it was intended to be. You got to invest more in security awareness and training. Often that's one of the things that gets cut first during bad budget times, bad economic times. And no one is immune. It's got to come from the top down. You got to get those guys and gals involved. We do have to protect our infrastructure. But like I said, what value is there in stealing a network, right? Stealing data is where it's at. How much data gets stored on a firewall? Not much that I know of, right? But you got to have firewalls, you got to have IDS, and so on and so forth. Remember the comment about what are you really monitoring? Now, I don't say look at reports, because no human can look at reports. I'm talking about automated triggers that say when somebody reads critical data, somebody needs to know about it like right away. Do be aware of who influences data breach laws. Whose citizens do you have data about? Do that research project. I mean, I was shocked with that credit union. 49 states and 13 or 14 countries, kind of scary. You do have to publish standards, but a lot of times those are great cures for insomnia. You need to have them, but awareness is how you bring it down to earth. And don't do this, well, when in doubt, give everybody all the access they need and beyond. Give them enough to do the job and make sure that's reviewed. And don't forget, users who have privileged access, sysadmins, DBAs, and so on down the line, you need to review their right to hold those privileges on a monthly basis. That's not a big deal because you're not talking about that many people. Now, if you have one of those places where the same old people have been doing it for the last 20 years, then maybe do it, you know, every couple of months. But some of you have very dynamic organizations for different reasons. You got the owners reviewing who can read, write, and execute, but you got to have somebody that holds the keys to the kingdom, make sure that's the right people. I'm saying don't clamp them down too much, but make sure the right people have the right stuff. And I can't overstate this. If you're in a competitive industry, there's people out there waiting to cut your throat. If you're not doing security attention and detailed audits, but again, those can be politically incorrect, so, you know, the audit director goes into the board and says, you guys aren't protecting your marketing data, and guess who the next chairman's going to be, the head of marketing? But you do have to manage that. So as I mentioned, in the back of the handout, there are many, many references on tools and also where to get more information. And hopefully what I provided to you this afternoon in the symbolism of this is my grandson, Reed Campbell, you score a touchdown, okay? Thank you for being a great audience. Thank you.